All right, welcome to the QTR Podcast. Stoked to have you with me today. First and foremost, before we get started, this podcast brought to you by my patrons. Patrons are people that sign up on Patreon and donate a monthly recurring sum to help support the podcast. That link is in my podcast description. Let me shout out some people that support the podcast. First and foremost, my exclusive gold and silver providers over at JM Bullion. They have been in business for nearly a decade. They've done over $7 billion in sales. JM Bullion is the only place that I buy my gold and silver bullion. They always have plenty of inventory. They turn around my orders very quickly. They ship discreetly. And I just love JM Bullion. QTR podcast listeners have their own sales rep at JM Bullion, which means you don't even have to use the website if you don't want to. I mean, you can. It's easy and simple to use. But maybe it's your first time buying bullion. You have some questions. You want the personalized touch because, after all, you deserve it. Email Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at jmbullion.com. Tell her you're a QTR podcast listener and give her whatever questions you have. She'd be happy to help you out and make sure that everything goes smoothly. JM Bullion, love you guys. Link is in my podcast description. This podcast also brought to you by my buddy George Gammon over at Rebel Capitalist Pro. I love Rebel Capitalist Pro. George has teamed up with Lynn Alden, Chris McIntosh, Brent Johnson, and a bunch of other very, very intelligent, fine individuals to help you figure out ways to preserve your wealth in a world of out-of-control central banks. I love George's two YouTube channels, Rebel Capitalist and George Gammon. He does live question and answer sessions. George is a prolific content creator and does a great job breaking down the basics of exactly how the central banking system works worldwide. So if you're looking for actual answers and less dick and fart jokes, turn my stuff off. Head on over to George Gammon. He's a bit more serious than I am. He wears suits. We'll just say that. I don't do that. And so Rebel Capitalist Pro is a great value, well worth it. I love their forums. You get access to all of people like Lynn Alden's premium research, all their mock portfolios. There are live discussions happening every day on the Rebel Capitalist forums. And so I love to check in over there. That link is also in my podcast description. This podcast also brought to you by my man Sang Lucci. We're going to talk about the Steam Room. We're going to talk about the upcoming master course he's got and anything else that Lucci wants to talk to. We'll see. We're doing an early morning podcast. We'll see if we can't catch him shaving on the podcast again. I don't know if you guys remember that one, but I made a clip of it. You can go to YouTube and search for Sang Lucci shaving on podcast, and you can go back and relive the memory from several years back where I caught Sang Lucci. He thought he had his phone on mute, and he was shaving on the podcast. Motherfucker, right? Finally, this podcast brought to you by my friends over at Swan. Swan is my only Bitcoin-related sponsor, and I keep it that way for a reason. I like Swan. I like their platform. Swan is a very simple, easy piece of software that allows you to invest recurring amounts into Bitcoin. So I know Bitcoin very controversial amongst many of my listeners. That's fine. I'll let you guys handle those arguments on the internet with one another. I'm not going to get involved. I've said what I needed to say about it. And what I can tell you is that I've done some due diligence and I have some friends that work very closely with Swan, and I like the people at Swan and I like their app. It is very, very simple to use. You can't really screw it up. And so I'm happy to have Swan as my only Bitcoin-related sponsor, probably only going to be my only Bitcoin-related sponsor. If they want to stay on, I'm not going to be Mr. Let's Tout a Thousand Things related to Bitcoin or crypto. But I get a good vibe when I talk to these guys. Hey, if Bitcoin does great, if Bitcoin fails, that's fine. That's on Bitcoin. You know, what I need to be able to do is say that I tie myself to people of integrity. And I've talked to the team at Swan. My buddy Larry Lepard's involved over there. Lynn Alden also works very closely with them. These are people that I trust. So I said, okay, Swan, you guys are in. You're in the, what is it, the Greg Burns Circle of Trust. Hey, if you're interested in Swan, if you're interested in buying Bitcoin on a recurring basis, you've never done it before, this is an app you can set it and forget it like the Ronco Showtime Grill. You can use my link in my podcast description. You get $10 of Bitcoin free. So, you know, right now that's a Domino's pizza. If Bitcoin goes to 10 million, it's a different story, right? Anyways, you use my link if you want to check out Swan. Send some love to those guys over there. And let's get started with the damn show. First and foremost, obviously, I haven't said this in a while. I'm not an investment advisor. This is not investment advice. I hold no licenses, no registrations with anybody. I hold no SEC licenses. I hold no Series 63. I'm not an RIA. I have no FINRA licenses. Just a couple of regular people just talking some shit about finance here. Please, for the love of God, do your own research and do your research elsewhere, folks, okay? This is not an analyst report that you should be relying on. This is the deranged musings of somebody with the comprehension of a fifth grader. All right. And also Sanglucci will be joining us today as well. And so, you know, there's that. I'll add that to the disclaimer. All right, let's get started. All right, I got my man, the one, the only, Sanglucci, taking an early morning wake-up call with me. I don't know when I'll publish this, but it's early in the morning right now. We decided to get together like the elder statesmen sitting around the fire in the village and spin a couple of yarns early in the morning for you young bucks. What's going on, man? How you doing?
What's up, Chris? Good to hear from you, man. Happy to sit down with you again, man. It's been a while.
Is our combined age over 100 yet?
No, we're not. I mean, we're getting there. We're getting there. You know, we're getting there.
How long you been trading? What age were you when you started trading?
24 years old, somewhere around there. 23, 24.
And how old are you now? 44?
40 years old, bro.
40 years old. Okay. So you got 17 years and I had 18 to 42. I got 23. So we got 40 years between the two of us.
Woo! That's some serious market knowledge right there. You remember? You know, I used to get up on stage. I remember getting up on stage one time and saying, "I don't want to do this when I'm older," kind of thing. Like my plan was always to, you know, make the money and get the hell out.
Right.
And you know, and it's wild how that changes. That conversation with yourself changes so much as the years go on, because as you get older, you just get better and better and better. You just see so many different market cycles. You see so many different things where, you know, where it brings new people to the market, it flushes them all out, and you're the one that's always sitting there and still going, you know, because you've acquired so much of this knowledge here about markets over the years, and it's almost stupid to give it up.
Well,
you know,
I feel dumber.
Really?
I mean, the markets now are so different than they were. Like,
they're so different. I mean, 100%. That's always going to be true. But why do you feel dumber?
I feel dumber because nothing makes sense. You know, I have these people that pay for a subscription to my Substack, and my last article literally said, "I don't know what is going on, why it's happening. Everything I do is wrong. I don't understand macro. I don't understand micro." You know, like, and don't forget to renew your subscriptions, please. You know, but that was pretty much the long and short of it, man. I mean, for a guy like you, you're talking about, all right, well, we're just getting better and better at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess like with what you do with reading tape,
yeah,
it really doesn't matter how fucked up the macro landscape becomes.
I'm sitting here
worrying about the death of the dollar, and you're just riding waves as they come in, you know, whether it's soybeans or stocks, right?
100%. It never matters, but I'll tell you what does matter. What does matter is your bias, right? So if I came into every day or every session thinking about what the hell is going on and how confusing this is and it doesn't make any sense, then I'm no longer reading the tape unbiasedly,
right,
to the point where it's telling me what to do kind of thing. And that's a whole nother struggle, right? That's a whole nother fight. That's a whole nother struggle. There's many people that can't get over that hurdle to just you know, trade the markets for what it is. I mean, you saw what happened during COVID. You saw what happened after COVID was no longer a problem. You see what's happening now, you know, and sure, I could take a step back at this and be like, this makes no sense whatsoever. And there's a part of me that does feel like that about these markets every single day. I mean, let's not forget the narratives and the sentiment that's being sold to us on a daily basis. And then the market does completely the opposite thing, right? And we saw that here last year with the sort of hyperinflation. Markets should come down. We're in this sort of recession and all this kind of stuff. And none of that happened. And meanwhile, the semiconductors just took us out of the depths here and continue to take us out. So do I have any idea what's going on? Hell no. Micron just blew out earnings and is up freaking God knows how many percent. And this NVIDIA is going to go to $1,000, $1,200. There was even an IPO yesterday. I forget what the hell it was, but all they had to say that they were tied to NVIDIA, and the stock is up 100% already. It's 100%, 200% already.
And
bro.
So does it bother you that we're seeing the same kind of, I don't even want to call it euphoria, but it's like euphoria squared on the crack pipe. We're seeing, I mean, that's the best way to describe it, right?
It
somebody, somebody just breathes AI, and it doesn't matter what your company is and how much cash it's losing. But does it matter? And that's all. That's one thing. But does it make you the least bit curious that we're seeing the same type of action, that same type of insanity that we saw during COVID, which was, you know, the liquidity environment in COVID was there's $5 trillion on the way.
Yep.
Everybody's got their PPP loans and their stimulus checks and whatever the hell else was happening.
Yep.
We're expanding the money supply by an unprecedented amount. So it was kind of like, at least there was an explanation, right? The explanation was the Fed is rejecting the economic reality and substituting their own, like the fucking economic Mythbusters. And now it's the opposite, right? Rates then were at zero. Rates now are at 5.5.
Yep.
Right. They've been at 5.5 or on the rise, at least for 2.5 years. The liquidity spigot has been turned off.
Right.
So people are tapping the piggy bank now and the credit cards for liquidity. And yet the market, it's the same type of euphoria. It's the options moving the market. And it's what appears to be unlimited liquidity in risk assets, man. If you had told me 2 years ago, the NASDAQ would be, the Qs would be at 450 right now.
450, yeah, we're literally at 450.
I would have bet everything that I owned. I would have bet every penny that I owned that you would be wrong.
Yeah.
And yet here we are and we're moving higher. And so doesn't that fuck your mind up a little bit? Like, what do you think about that in general?
Honestly, I try to come up with the narratives. And by the way, they've always said that it's only been five names or seven names or the Mag 7 and the semiconductors that, you know, money is flowing to. But that's bullshit. It's bullshit. Have you looked at Abercrombie and Fitch?
Right.
Have you looked at, like, Deckers outdoor goods and shit? Have you looked at all this stuff? Like, it's coming in a lot of different places. And, of course, all the crypto names as well. That thing that you're throwing out there, I don't have an answer for it. I have funny answers. I have the answers like, oh, like I have the answers like, okay, people are taking Ozempic. Now they're not spending all this money on fucking food because they're going to throw up while they're taking Ozempic. And so, you know, maybe the money goes elsewhere. Like, I have no idea where this level of liquidity is coming from. That is very, it perplexes me every single day, because that same narrative, it shouldn't play out here. And then you could compare this stuff. People are comparing this stuff to the dot-com era, and, you know, with all these valuations going through the roof. You know how I rationalize it, Chris? I always rationalize it as this is the same human behavior, you know, happening time and time again. And when it comes back out, that's going to be my world. You know what I mean? And I will be able to make millions of fucking dollars again and again and again. Because human behavior never fails, man. It never fails, these sort of boom and bust cycles. So as ridiculous as this looks right now, Abercrombie and Fitch is going back to $0 at some fucking point in time. and all of these semiconductor names that have, you know, absolutely blown up are coming back to reality at some point in time. And that's human behavior. And I will always triumph when those things happen.
Just going back to the Mag 7, you know, let's just say that those people are right. And you're making a good point that they're not, but let's say that they're right. Then you have seven stocks that are tied into every single exchange traded fund anywhere, right?
Yep.
So there is not an ETF, whether it's an ESG ETF, whether it's a value ETF, whether it's a fucking dividend paying ETF, an S&P ETF, tech ETF, those seven names are tied into, you know, Apple's on the fucking balance sheet of the Swiss National Bank. So you get those seven moving up and you have a tail wagging the dog type situation. Same thing with the gamma squeezes with the options, right?
Sure.
You have a tail wagging the dog type of situation. So then the question becomes, and Burry was talking about this, Michael Burry was talking about this years ago, you know, with the passive investing eventually kind of whiplashing backwards and tearing things, you know, essentially the market becoming far more distorted because of the tail wagging the dog. But so I think that's a good point to bring up there. But there's just been no signs that the train's going off the track. And this week with Powell's comments, which tacitly imply that they're going to surrender to a higher inflation target, which we've all known for a while.
Sure.
It just doesn't seem like there's any reason for anybody to duck out. Now, having said that, the last few major crashes have occurred after the Fed starts cutting. Do you know that?
After the Fed starts cutting? I didn't know that. I did not know that. I did not know that.
2001, 2008, there were already signs and situations, I think, that prompted the Fed to cut, or it could have just been them cutting at the end of the cycle. But those crashes happened after. Lehman went bankrupt after the Fed started cutting rates.
No shit. And
so it's almost the clarion call for the crash there. If, you know, it's homework I wish I had done 2 years ago instead of talking shit for 2 years and getting everything wrong.
Sure.
But over the last, you know, year, I've been looking at this very closely, and I've written about it on my blog. Yeah. Yeah, it's after the cuts that the crash usually comes. So who knows? Yeah. Maybe that'll be the sign, man.
I mean, I've heard of, and I know explicitly of one in particular of tech short funds that have gone completely belly up, you know, $100 million, $200 million funds going completely belly up because of the same narrative here. And again, you go back to Burry here catching the big short, so to speak, you know, just the cost of carrying that short here and just being able to stay alive until your time comes here. It's a costly endeavor.
It's devastating
here,
right?
You know what
it's
I'm
devastating.
Saying?
It's not just the cost to borrow. It's the 2% green days every day.
Every day, man. Every day. And it's like they're floating up on freaking – I mean, after that reaction, and again, we don't know when this pod is going to come out here, but that reaction here, I mean, we're talking about 3 on March 20th. That reaction from the Fed here, from the comments from Powell – I mean, dude, there was no flush. Usually you'll see some kind of program getting people out.
It's almost always at 2 o'clock. It goes one way, then it goes the other, and then it settles. Almost always. And we've been watching. How long have we been watching these minutes drop? 20 years, each of us?
20 years.
Almost, and it's the same with macro data in the morning. Whipsaws one way, whipsaws the other, settles, finds its directions, and goes. And yesterday was just straight up.
Straight up.
End of story.
Straight up. And again, we're sitting here on the morning of the 21st here. We're looking at a fat gap up and continuation for all kinds of stuff. I mean, even crypto. Crypto bounced back as well here after selling off 10,000 points from the highs. And, you know, it's back to business as usual kind of thing. And that's what we're seeing in this market for like a year plus now, where they'll – and now 1%, by the way, on SPY – 1%, by the way, on SPY is like 10 freaking points.
Fucking ridiculous,
so
isn't it?
It's all, you know, it's 10 points. So they can whipsaw 1% and shake everybody out and get people short and trap shorts again and continue this thing over and over and over and over. I still don't understand, though, how – you know, you can come in and buy Abercrombie and Fitch and tell me with a straight face that this is all fucking good. You know what I mean?
Let me ask you a question about Abercrombie and Fitch. I mean, I saw, maybe it was you even. I was watching your show the other day.
Yeah.
But somebody mentioned it. And I was just thinking, like, man, like, I stopped buying that shit when I was, like, 21. Now I need you to, listen, I need you to level with me here because I don't know what's going on. I'm not a fashion fucking guy.
Sure.
I'm not into that shit. I remember I would go to the mall, and, you know, when I was 16, 17, 18, so we're talking about 98, 99, 97, okay? Yep. I stayed away from Aeropostale. It was not my shit. It was a little on the cheap side, even for a lower middle class individual like myself. I was heavy on the American Eagle. Okay, I was heavy on the Pacific Sunwear. Was probably my number one, my main chick. I did a little dabbling into the Abercrombie world. Was not a Hollister guy. Did not like that when Ryan Cabrera look came out. Tried to put that off to the side. That was not really my vibe. I was more your surfer style vibe, whatever. But then when I turned, like, 22, all of a sudden, man, I just stopped shopping at those kind of places. I don't know where I went to. I went to, like, I'm trying to think. Like, I don't even know where, you know, where I buy my shit. Maybe the Gap or something. But, like, so now I'm looking back, and I'm thinking, like, who is it the kids that buy
it's
Abercrombie?
It's 100% the kids. I mean, my daughter's 18, and that's the first store that she walks into. Literally is the first store that she walks into when we go to the mall. And she'll go for the jeans, and she'll go for that kind of vibe. And again, like, every time I walk in there, it is fucking packed, man. And Hollister brand, Hollister in particular, is one of their most successful brands, and that's the one that's supposedly just kind of knocking it out the park. I mean, the last earnings came in, and they had a jump in 28% for the for Hollister brands compared to last year. So most of it was fucking Hollister, man. And I don't get that flow, man, and I'm the similar as you, man. I'll go to freaking Zara. I'll end up going to Zara, and I'll end up buying a freaking $20 pair of stretchy joggers and a t-shirt and call it a motherfucking day, H&M and all that kind of stuff.
I do like H&M, but even when I was a kid, man, I was never – I don't know. I just wasn't an Abercrombie. Hollister was just – You know, it was funny, man, because, like, we went to – it's funny. I was going through my old ticket stubs the other day, man. Uh-huh. I saw Blink-182, Phoenix TX.
You kept that shit?
Listen,
your concert tickets?
Yeah, I'll post it on Twitter. I saw Phoenix TX, Blink-182, Good Charlotte, and Newfound Glory at the same show for, like, $9 in, like, 1997. So we were going to shows, and we were surfing at the Jersey Shore and shit.
Yeah.
But, like – Hollister, for some reason, it was always too preppy for me, man. It was like
it's very preppy, man.
You know,
it was
the OC. Preppy. You remember that show?
OC, I do remember that show.
It was the different kind of surfers. They were like, you know, preppy West Coast, you know, surfers with their hair highlighted. We were like grimy Jersey Shore, dodging, you know, syringes and jellyfish, trying to fucking, you know, deal with the world's worst waves.
You know, the kids are still getting a lot of money from the schools. There's still a lot of money from the schools that are coming out. There's still all the loans that, you know, the kids live off of when they go to school and everything. You know, maybe that's somewhat of a liquidity argument. But even then, man, to support this kind of stock price, man, I can't accept it.
What's the earnings multiple? I know what the stock's at. It's at like 140 or something, right? What's the earnings multiple, you know?
Stock's at 140. I don't know what the earnings multiple is for this one.
Let's look at it real quick. I don't really like to do research as my...
Forward PE of just 17.2.
Let's see. Apparently. Is that what it is?
That's what it looks like here.
Let's see. I mean, for a retailer, that's still aggressive, though.
It is aggressive.
Especially when in-person retail, you know, trading around a 10 times PE for the last, like, decade... Let me see. Sure. I can't fucking get it. I'll just take your word for it. I don't feel like
Even Macy's is a freaking turnaround story, which I can't accept and I can't even understand, you know. But again,
they got a portfolio of real estate too.
Sure. But again, this shit's worth fucking nothing in my head here. And Nordstrom and all this kind of stuff. I still don't get it. I mean, I walked out of freaking Hugo Boss the other day because I needed like a nice suit, man. I needed something nice, man. And I walked out of there paying, you know, $3,000, man. And I was so depressed with myself, bro.
Man, I don't know. I wouldn't wear Boss. Maybe a suit I would wear. But yeah, maybe I'd wear a Boss suit. Everything else looks like what you get when you get comped at the casino. You go to, you go to those fucking casino shops where everything's like triple the price. So you pay with your comp dollars. It's all like Hugo Boss. Always. Yeah. Like the just the gnarliest shit in those those shops. What the hell was I going to say? What were you just saying before that?
We were talking about just the Hugo Boss.
Oh, Macy's.
Macy's.
Macy's. Let me just tell you something, man. Walked into a Macy's. First off, I can't tell you the last time I actually had the thought in my head, hey, I need something. I got to step out and go to Macy's.
Sure. Like, sure.
It's probably been 15 years, 20 years. You know what I mean? Oh, I need fill in the blank. I need to go to Macy's. I don't think that's ever happened. I need socks. I need to go to Macy's. I need a jacket. I need to go to Macy's. I need a comforter. I need to go to Macy's. All that shit that they sell. I haven't thought that in probably 20 years. What I will say is this. I walked into the Macy's, two of them actually. There was one here downtown and then one in the suburbs, probably within the last 6 months for two separate reasons. And what I'll tell you is Macy's still feels like Macy's. I opened those front doors right down to the fucking big cast iron front doors that have not been changed in 40 years, to the design on the floor, to the carpet that hasn't been changed, to the little placards, the little fiberglass placards that they put up, like, Sale or Calvin Klein or whatever. Dude, that is like stepping into a fucking time machine, man. I open that door and that smell of Macy's hits me. And I see fucking Tom McCann shoes and fucking Izod polos and the Estee Lauder counter. And my head, brother, my head goes to 1989 walking through like JCPenney's and Macy's with my mom, you know, back at the Brunswick Square Mall. You know, like my head, like they haven't changed a fucking thing. They haven't changed a fucking thing, Lucci.
Yep, they're still trying to sell you cologne when you walk by. You're still trying to dodge the cologne and the salespeople there, the jewelry, you know, that you got to pass through the jewelry and shit to get to the fucking shoes, man. Yeah.
The ladies with the makeup, you know, the full face, fucking the old ladies. It looks good on you, though. You know, I'm going to pass, but, you know, you're wearing it well. Don't worry.
I'll bring it back to the human condition, man. It further proves that we also, as much as we do change or whatever, we don't. We really fucking don't, man. We see the same shit over and over again, and the same shit works, man. And the best play to see that, is just go to the mall. Walk to the mall, and you'll be like, okay, this is what it is. This is America right here. You know
it
what
just
I mean?
Never died. Remember during COVID, it was like, well, the malls are done. Short Simon Property Group, you know, whatever. And then they just turned into like cockroaches, these malls. Like you fucking step on them, but then they just survive, you know? Like there's a guy getting up going to work at some Sears right now that survived bankruptcy, you know, that's like an anchor store at a mall somewhere, just like, damn, see if I can move a warranty on a washer today, you know? It's fucking wild.
There is a the malls over here in Puerto Rico and a lot of malls across the United States. What I've seen and what I've seen work for this one particular mall, bro, is that they built out a whole wing, and I'm talking about wing of the mall, for 12 to 14 pickleball courts. And there's there's TVs in there. There's a sports bar in there. There's a shop in there, and the amount of people that I see filing through the door that are just dressed up to go play pickleball, and then after, you know, the kids are there, their kids are there watching, their kids are there running around and shit, then they want to go get food, then they want to go do this, then they want to go do that. It's actually pretty impressive, man. It's actually pretty impressive. And, you know, where there's a will, there's a way, man.
And there's a social element to
it
also.
There's a social element, 100%.
You know, and nothing has given me more clarity about, like, the need for different places for social elements than I haven't been drinking this month. I took January off, and I'm taking March off as well. And so you find yourself looking to do – things that don't involve going to a bar as much. I still go to the bar. I drink that Guinness Zero, which is fucking fantastic.
Wow, so you still go to the bar, though. You still go to the bar.
Not,
so
yeah, but not able, as much. Not as much.
You've been able to work on your, I guess, your social discipline in the sense that you're there with your friends and you're able to say, how long did it take you, would you say, to be able to say no sitting at that bar? I'm sure that were many times where you couldn't say no and you just gave in and had a beer. Like, how long would you say it took you?
It wasn't too hard, to be honest with you, because a lot of times when I go, I'm going to eat. You know, like, I'm not out swinging from the chandeliers at midnight anymore, you know? So, like, I'm going and I'm looking to get some food and I'm looking to get home in bed by 10 o'clock, whether I'm drinking alcohol or not. And so, to me, there's essentially no difference between having a Guinness Zero and having a regular Guinness. They taste almost identical. The vibe's, you know, pretty much exactly the same. The only difference is, you know, one or two beers gives me a hangover now, where having none, I feel noticeably better in the morning. But the point of the matter is that, like, even though I'm not going as much, obviously, as I would, but the things that I do in place of that, you know, like going to the movies or something, right? You know, I'll go out and I'll see a movie where normally I wouldn't. Or I'll go out and, you know, what else I do? I don't know. I'll go to, like, Kung Fu Tea in Chinatown. And I'll go sit and have a tea.
That's a dope chain. I like that chain.
It is, man. It's nice. And so the point is, the malls are the same thing. It's a social, you know, it's a social gathering. It's something to do socially. And if they can stick in pickleball and movie theaters and, you know, the fucking, like, jet ski thing that the mall in New Jersey's doing, that giant, like, American Dream Mall or whatever it was that went bankrupt immediately after they finished it. Get people in there, and then they will shop once they get there. You just got to get them in the door.
You got to get them in the door. And pickleball, by the way, now that we're on the subject of social, you know, of you know, this sort of creating these social climates here, pickleball is out of control, son.
It is.
It is out of control, son. Yo, I am now emceeing and running live streams for beach tennis tournaments down here in Puerto Rico, and they're about to contract me for the pickleball stuff as well. So when you see a live stream transmission, and I'm doing it in Spanish and English, and when you see a live stream transition of beach tennis down here in Puerto Rico, it's me. And the quality is there. So paddle and pickleball are growing. And let me tell you, bro, at these beach tennis tournaments, again, I mean, we're talking about the beach here, there are thousands of people that show up every single day to either watch the games, play the games, or just sit there, drink, and hang out with their friends who are playing. And then you're seeing the same thing in pickleball, but at a much higher level too, because pickleball's got so much money in it now, where players are getting paid $100,000, $200,000 a year just to play.
Wow.
And the game, it's, you still have to have the hands, you know, you still have to have the hands and the control and the hand-eye coordination and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the athleticism that's required in actual tennis, when you see a fucking Carlos Alcaraz,
insane,
you know, destroying the ball and wrapping around to do all kinds of crazy tricks and things, it's much different. It is much different, you know, but that social aspect is there 100%, and it will cause you to feel like you need to spend $500 on a bag, on a racket, on the balls, on socks, on the right shoes, and everything, just to be a part of that social group, man. So if that shit brings the money out, bro.
So how do we place a public market bet on pickleball? What's the best way to do that?
Yo, it's amazing that you're talking about this right now, because I'm in talks with a group down here to bring the betting, because you don't really have it yet to pickleball and beach tennis. Because when I MC some of the tournaments, there's a big screen on center court. I just want to be like, yo, I just put the bet on X, Y, and Z, and then get them to sponsor, you know, get them to sponsor the tournaments and things like that. So right now, FanDuel is the only place where you can do pickleball. There is data for it right now, and that data is being – I think it's done by Genius, and Genius is one of the back-end data providers. They provide the lines and shit for most of the sports betting applications out there. So it's coming. It's coming. It's 100% coming to DraftKings. It's 100% coming to all
these
platforms.
What about pickleball brands themselves? Are there any of those public? I don't even know who the
No. However, there was a there is one that I'm kind of going to try to align with. They sell rackets and they sell a bunch of other things, bags and all this
head?
Kind of stuff. no, it's not Head. Head has not. I don't know if they've gotten into the game as well, but it's a company called Thrift. It's a that's what it's called, Thrift Pickleball. So so yeah, man, I'm deep in this world, bro. I'm deep in this world, man.
Dude, tennis used to like. I gotta tell you, man, tennis is one of those things where you watch it and you're like, ah, you know. This isn't as fun as baseball, or, you know, it's not as action-packed or whatever. Sure. And, like, you know, you just go and you just try to play tennis, and you're just like, I am a piece of shit. It's like jiu-jitsu. It's the same thing, man. You watch a couple of guys, like, in the octagon, or you watch a couple of guys, like, at a jiu-jitsu tournament, you know, it's like, what the fuck are these guys doing? Just rolling around, you know, doing nothing, like, and you have no idea the amount of strength that's being exerted or, like, how difficult. And then you try it, you're like, oh, fuck, like, I should have never opened my mouth. You know, and tennis is fucking, you have to be in insane shape.
It's so hard
to play
though.
Tennis, dude.
It's so hard, man. It's so hard. People don't understand how difficult it is to be good. And again, the world of sports betting and the world of getting paid as a professional in these kinds of sports, it's almost impossible for you to be that good. Like, it really is. Statistically speaking, it's almost fucking impossible, man. How's it going for you on the jiu-jitsu, man? You still sticking with it?
Yeah, it's going pretty good, man. I've been dealing with I'm pretty active. I run like
you run a lot,
25 and 40 miles a week, and then I'm at the gym a couple days a week, and then I am training too, and I box.
Yo, but that means you could eat at a bar and eat shitty bar food every day and still get away with it.
Not really. What I can do is I can stay at the same weight if I do that. But like now, this year so far, my diet's really been a lot better, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm just kind of losing a half pound a week, and I'm not even trying to stay in a deficit, which is just great. So this is where I want to be, man.
Is that your motivation? Was that your motivation to stop drinking and all that kind of stuff? Was that your motivation?
No, I've just been working a lot, and I'm going on vacation in a couple of weeks, and so I'm thinking that, you know, I would just kind of reward myself by going on vacation, and if I want to go and, you know, sip of my time, relax when I'm on vacation, that's fine. But, like, you know, now I want to, you know, I need to put the work in first, and with that, I want to be disciplined with my workout, etc. The one thing I want to go back and ask you about, though, you were talking before about, like, the S&P and pretty much, like, the law of large numbers. Sorry to, like, turn it right back to the market, but I was thinking last night about gold and how, you know, gold has obviously gone ham since this Powell presser. You know, anything with a fixed supply, all the hard assets kind of going bananas now that it looks like we're going to head back into QE. And I was just thinking, man, you know, a 1% move in gold is now $22 an ounce, right? Gold goes to $5,000 over the next 2-3 years, man. A 1% move is now $50 an ounce. If gold's at $5,000 an ounce, a 5% move in gold will be what the entire price of gold was in 2001. And it's the same, right, for the market. So if the Dow goes to, you know, say the Dow goes to 100,000, you know, if you're having a, fucking 2% day, you're talking about 2,000 points on the Dow, man. And so, like, I don't know. You think about shit like that? You think about, like, the, like, law of large numbers and, like, how are you basically, like, I watch your stream in the morning, man. It seems like you wake up, you pick, like, 6 tickers, you dial in, and you're just focused, you're zoomed in on what you're doing, and really doesn't matter if the world is kind of burning around you.
Well, you know, you made a couple of points there. When you're talking about precious metals and gold and silver, do you know that there's now zero DTEs? I don't know if you know that. There's now zero day expiring options on silver ETFs, on gold ETFs, and on oil ETFs. And what that's going to do to some of these products, especially the ETFs, is you're going to see the same kind of games and the same kind of you know, sort of intraday price manipulation that you see on SPY now and SPX, which means those two, you know, those 2% or 1% moves that you're talking about that are so fucking absurd, they're going to ping, they're going to ping pong back between the extremes of that 1% every single day. While overall, you're going to look at a 5-year trend or, you know, a year trend up or 2 years trend up, and it's going to look like nothing. But intraday, the amount of opportunity here, intraday, just looking at these things, because of there's, you know, because there's zero DTEs, it's spawning a whole new world of trading, of volumes, of all kinds of shit that has nothing to do with, you know, the macro, that has nothing to do with any of that stuff.
Right.
So I can exist on this plane, you know, to circle back to your question, I can exist on this plane without giving a shit about the world burning, without giving a shit about what makes sense, without giving a shit about any of this stuff, as long as I take that out of the equation, right? I have to mentally take that out of the equation, because if I don't, I'm not going to be able to trade these things as, you know, as I see fit. Or I, you know, I'm like you and I just store a bunch of gold and wait for it to go to 5,000. By the way, your boy Peter Schiff, I see him all the time.
He's fucking tweaking right now, isn't he?
I see him all the time now, bro.
Yeah.
I see him at bars now. I see him hanging out. He's now ingrained in the Bitcoin.
You say what's up to him or no?
Of course, of course. He's just a very awkward guy. It's just a very awkward conversation, so to speak. You know,
well,
it's
almost you can tell when you meet him that he believes the shit that he's saying.
Oh, 100%.
You know what I mean? He's
100%.
The same fucking dude on the podcast, on TV, as he is in real life. I learned that
as
the first
real life.
Yeah, I learned that the first few times I hung out and like had a drink with him. And I'm like, man, like this dude fucking like, you know, so people that say, oh, it's an act or whatever, you're just like, hell no. I actually think, believe it or not, I actually think he's like on the spectrum a little bit. I think him and Michael Saylor actually too. They both, you know, they obviously have very opposing views on Bitcoin, but they both remind me of one another in the sense that I get the feeling that in both of their heads, they, you know, they think about things from a like, you know, Saylor would say like a thermodynamic, like adiabatic system type. You know, like they, it makes sense to them completely in their head with no leaks.
Yep.
They have, you know, in their heads, they have the vacuum of macro figured out and the vacuum of their Bitcoin argument or their gold argument figured out. And that's where they exist. And the rest of the world will acquiesce to those, to the way that they see it. Otherwise, they will spend, you know, infinite amount of time trying to explain it. And I think in their heads, they both feel this incessant need to try to communicate that and get that across. And so, you know, look, I like Peter a lot. I think he's a person of integrity. I think he's an honest person. If he wasn't, you know, and I've known him long enough where we've had some disagreements about things. We've had a couple of kind of butting heads moments actually behind the scenes.
Sure.
Believe it or not, that I won't get into, where we resolve them like gentlemen. And that tells you, for me, all I need to know about somebody. So, but I see him posting pictures down there in fucking Dorado. He's hanging out with everybody down there with his tan and
not
his fucking
only
pinky
there.
Ring.
Yeah, man. Not only there, like in San Juan, he'll come out to do crypto. He'll come out to speak and hang out with all the crypto people now, bro. And it's hilarious, man. You should see the comedy that happens. This one guy was interviewing him on stage at this event called Crypto Mondays down here, which takes place down here, and they showcase a new crypto project every single Monday, or they just invite people to talk. And they invited Peter Schiff to talk about, you know, BTC, and it was literally a comedy show on stage where he was just kind of joking around and making fun of everybody, and everybody knew him, and everybody knew him as that guy who doesn't understand, you know, they try to ask him what BTC was, could he explain it, blah, blah, blah. He would go back against the presenter and be, can you explain it? Nobody knows, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And it was pure I'm telling you, man, it was pure comedy. Everybody in there was laughing, and he hangs out with crypto people now.
He's funny as fuck, man. He's a funny fucking dude, and he's not the kind of guy that, like, you know, will take it personally. Like you're saying, he hangs out with crypto people, you know? Like, he's not the kind of dude that's going to, like, choose his friends based on that. Like, he'll disagree with you. But I said famously on this podcast, I tweeted something, you know, one day, I think it was like a Friday night or something, and he called me like the next day at like 11 p.m. or I just remember I was at a family barbecue. It must have been the weekend. And he called me to like argue about this tweet that I wrote about whether or not Zelensky should be wearing a suit while he's talking in front of Congress. You know, Schiff was like, the least you could do is he could do is put a suit on. And I wrote something. This is right at the beginning of the war. And I wrote, like, hey, like, give the guy a break. You know, he's trying to fucking get his shit together for the war or something, whatever. And, like, that just it festered with him probably all day Friday until, like, Saturday night or something. No, it must have been Saturday afternoon. I remember standing outside around a bonfire eating fucking barbecue. And the phone rings, and it's Peter Schiff. He doesn't call me that often, you know? Like, I'm like, what's going on? What do you want? He's like, He's like, listen, I want to talk to you about this thing that you put up on Twitter yesterday. I really think you got it wrong. You know, I want to explain my side of the story to you. I'm like, motherfucker, I'm at a barbecue. It's Saturday. And I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not worth fucking $100 million like you are. Like, don't you have other things to do today other than argue with me? You know, so it's like at that point I start to realize, like, man, okay, he really does have – he has conviction in the things that he says for
he's
sure.
He's in this, man. He's in this. He's in this for real, man. And it's so surprising. And but by the way, Chris, that's what Puerto Rico is. Puerto Rico is 1-2 degrees of separation with folks who are really moving their industries and really, you know, players in their respective games here. And Puerto Rico is such an amazing place because you can get that kind of access here. And you can get that access just by showing up at a freaking at a bar or at the right place at the right time, man. You can get put on at the right place at the right time. I mean, he's got a whole crew of folks and locals who just kind of live down here, who just kind of been around him, and that now have jobs because of him, and now have a lifestyle because of him. And there's so many, you know, there's so many other examples of that. So Puerto Rico is just it's an amazing place to be in right now at this moment in time.
I think, I don't know, is Harris Kupperman down there too? I know Maj, my buddy Maj from Geo Investing's down there. You ever see those two guys?
Yep, Maj I've seen from Geo Investing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He's a good dude. You tell him I said what's up. Maj is another kind of guy. While we're talking about people that are just absolutely obsessed with like finding excellent investments. Like that dude, he focuses on micro caps.
He focuses on shit that nobody fucking knows about. Nobody has even seen or has even, you know, the real micro cap stuff. He actually showed me a platform he was working on the other day. He was at the office the other day. So shout out to Maj, man. Shout out to Maj. Good dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, I worked for Maj for, like, you know, 5 years. And the time in – you know, he's exhausting to work for, but that's a good thing if you're, like – well, that's a good thing if you're following him because, like, he is just from focusing his energy onto one thing. You ever see, like, watch those motivational tapes and they tell you, like, you know, pour your focus and energy into one thing and become the best out of it. The focus and energy that he has put into just identifying potential microcap ideas that have, you know, 10, 15-year trajectories out from them, and to find those types of, you know, $10 million market cap companies, $15 million market cap companies when they're on the cusp of a turnaround. I remember when I was working for him, it was when SaaS was starting. So he was trying to look at all these companies that were transitioning to recurring revenue models. And, you know, and a lot of times those companies, it takes 2 years and the financials get all fucked up. And, like, you know, it looks real ugly on paper, but they come out of it with, like, huge margins and long runways. And he's just one of these guys. Like, nobody has to tell him to get up in the morning. Nobody has to tell him to fucking, like, work. Like, I know he works. I haven't talked to him in years, and I guarantee you he still works fucking 12, 14-hour days.
He 100% does. He told me the same thing.
Obsessed.
He told me the same thing.
With finding great microcap companies, so he's a good dude. Shout out to Maj. I don't think I haven't talked to Maj in years, but you know, if you're looking for microcaps, that's a good dude to talk to. I just want to ask you about zero date to expiration options real quick because you mentioned it before.
Yeah,
you know, you're much more of an expert in options than I am. In your opinion, how much are the zero DTE options, which have been around for a while now, but like,
sure,
how much are they responsible for the market's movement versus organic, you know, investing one way or the other? And at what point does that become problematic? Do you know what that threshold is?
All right.
If it's not
this
already,
is gonna be, this is going to be the topic of debate for a considerable period in time, considering how the CBOE is going to continue to roll zero DTEs out on probably a lot more names than we think of. Right now, they're hitting them on the futures products and all this kind of stuff. But eventually here, they might hit on an Apple. They might hit on a freaking, you know, an Amazon.
Or fucking, probably within the year, I'd say Apple. The Mag 7, probably within a year, they got to have them, right?
Right, which is unbelievable. So here's the breakdown. There are very, very small moments in time where this zero DTE kind of stuff can trickle into a larger problem with the overall markets and overall trends. As we said before, we were talking about gold, and now, you know, the possibility of it going to 5,000 and the intraday activity being moved and pushed by zero DTEs. Zero DTEs are going to really create a volatile intraday session. It's always going to create a volatile intraday session. Now, to what point can it have a larger impact you know, on the overall markets? There are small periods in time where the gamma comes into the equation, and there are small periods in time where a move gets exaggerated so much that it starts triggering other shit.
Right.
And when it starts triggering other programs and other, you know, sciences and other, you know, metrics, so to speak, then you have a scenario here where that one trigger could cause a flash crash that is very close to what Narinder Singh got pinged for back in the day here, where we saw that flash crash and we saw names like, what was it, Target, that printed 1 cent that day or something like that and then went all the way back up on the next
tick.
That's
all I keep thinking about, right, is if Gamma comes in and puts a lot of pressure on shit intraday and sentiment changes, right, forget people hitting the sell button on their equities. What happens when you have delta hedging that needs to occur when and these fucking maniacs aren't going out and buying Lucci? If the Qs are at fucking, say the Qs are at 450, right? Yeah. These fucking freaks of nature, maniacs, fucking Wall Street bets, whatever they call themselves, gorilla fucking retard, chicken tender eating motherfuckers, they're not going out and buying the 448 strike, Lucci. If the Qs are at 450, on a same day option, they'll go down and buy the 375. Why? Because they're a penny on the offer, and because fucking they don't know what they're doing, which is great. But then you got to deal with the chaos that's gonna, you know, that's the reverse of what happened with GameStop, right? It was at $2, and people are buying 1,000 strike options, and so, like the cascading effect.
Exactly.
Of the zero date to expiration options in a panic situation. I mean, don't you think that we could see like a flash crash the likes of which we've never seen before?
As I just said, that is your risk, and absolutely we could 100% see it. We've already seen it on an intraday basis to a certain extent. I've seen literally 100 handle ES programs intraday that get retraced, that literally all of it gets retraced
right
in the same day. And so anybody who's looking at this from, you know, a year or a month perspective or whatever, they'd never catch it. And those programs are enough here to trigger something really catastrophic. So absolutely, I'm in the same camp. It's going to happen at one point because, again, nobody – the SIBO and, you know, even these crypto people or whatever, nobody talks about it until the shit happens. You know what I mean? And nobody is safe until the shit happens. And once it happens, then they go try to blame everybody. And
you got the congressional hearings where nobody knows what they're talking about. Exactly. And then I got to listen to fucking Maxine Waters' ass try to talk about the head of the fucking finance committee or whatever she is trying to explain 0 day to expiration options. This woman can't even balance a checkbook, you know.
That's going to happen. That day is going to come, Chris, and that day is going to come. And you can timestamp it. We talked about this on the 21st of freaking March 2024. That day is coming. It will come. It will come. And hopefully I'm on the right side of that shit because there'll be 200x gains on that day.
Yeah, but then there's counterparty risk, right?
Of course, then of course. Your whole broker could go down. You know, your whole broker could go down. And then what? You got no payout anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the risks, my friend. This is the dangerous world that we play in, man.
How far away do you think we are from something like that happening? Because
6 months to a year,
I think you're probably about right. And I do think we're going to see daily options on the Magnificent Seven, which are just, that's just alarming, man.
But it's going to bring a whole lot of new players to the market. It's going to bring a whole lot of new game to the market, and that's all they're looking to do. I mean, that's all they're looking to do.
Will that extra liquidity in the options market fuck up what you do? Because doesn't part of like what you guys do with the Steam Room and a link to all of Lucci's shit's in the podcast description, by the way. But, you know, aren't you guys successful in the Steam Room in part because of the lack of liquidity on the options market compared to the equities market kind of gives you a heads up, an edge?
That's a great point, man. That's a great point. I mean, I think you're still going to see flow as it is. I think you know, longer term flow, for example, on a name like Abercrombie & Fitch, we've been seeing buyers for the last 6 months just roll up their fucking positions.
Right.
We've seen that on Costco. We've seen that on so many different names here where those are the large mutual funds and those are the large holdings of every single fund out there, Chipotle and all this kind of stuff. You'll just see them rolling every single month here to more, you know, to more options and things like that. I think you're still going to see that, but I think there's a new game here. There's 100% a new game here from the intraday perspective where the intraday flow starts to get really fucking messy and somebody won't be able to tell the difference. So that's actually a great point, man. And we're constantly working on these things, these changes in the market, and then figuring out where to position ourselves. You know what I mean? So the advent of the zero DTEs, that's why we created this new tool in the room called the Gamma. It's called the GEX tool here. So we basically show gamma exposure for market makers on a number of different names. That way, what we can show our customers is that, hey, listen, these market makers are on the ropes here. People are rolling up options here. These market makers got a hedge. So we know they're going to come in and delta hedge on these particular names. And we know there's going to be moves up on these particular names and you could get these gamma squeezes. So we actively look for that. We actively create tech for our users for that as well. And I'm all over this zero DTE shit, man. I'm all over this thing. So there's going to be a new game in town and we're just going to have to, you know, evolve with that game.
The best of my understanding, and this is, I am not in the options world like you are. I'm an observer from the very 30,000 foot level. But over the last 20 years, what I've noticed is if you see a lot of, and I don't follow options actively, I'll just, you know, I get some alerts on my Twitter, but that's it. But what I've noticed is oftentimes if you see a player take a big position, say somebody comes and takes a big call position out of the money in a name, you'll see a hit right away. So you'll see the stock. I guess there's some type of automated delta hedging that happens as soon as the contracts go off. But then I feel like the next day at 10 a.m. for some reason, Eastern, there's always a hit related to the day before's options activity. Now, is that bullshit, or am I fucking seeing things, or is that like the arbitrage that you're kind of talking about?
Yeah, it's tough, that is the arbitrage that I'm talking about. And again, it's tough to actually sit there, quantify it, look at it, and be able to give an explanation like that on why these sort of things happen. But once you get these gamma squeezes, and once that market maker has to delta hedge that position, it almost always comes back in this type of market. So the next day you really see that premium come off on those options. You really see it all just kind of come back down for the market makers. And then everybody who was left holding the bag that was looking for follow through, and that follow through is almost never fucking there. And by the way, with the ranges that are so much wider now on every single name, I think it's much easier. It's a much easier game for the market maker to play, man, because they're the ones that have all the cash at their disposal. They're the ones that have all the tech and all the automation systems to hedge and, you know, to add more when they need to. And, you know, it's heaven out here for market makers. I do have to say that.
The crazy thing is there's been so many situations I've seen where, you know, the underlying doesn't even have to come close to getting in the money. You could have an equity trading at 50, yep, right? And you could have, you start to notice some steam at the $70 and $80 strikes, right?
Sure.
And so you start to think like, okay, you're starting to see some momentum in this name. Like you said, the delta hedging is probably going to happen. You're going to see the underlying start to tick up, whatever. You know, there's been situations and circumstances, not anytime recently, but back in the day when I was speculating heavily, yeah, where I would go into the $150 strikes for a penny, buy them for a penny, wait till that, you know, 10-15% move up the next day, because then you got the implied volatility is, yep, going to double. So you got a penny strike that starts trading at, you know, 20 cents. It never comes close to getting in the money, but yep, you're looking at a 10-15x just on the spike in implied volatility, which is just, I mean, and that's like game theory on game theory, man. That's crazy shit.
Dude, yesterday, and again, let's mark the date here, March 20th. Yesterday, I saw this guy come in and buy zero DTEs, 5 minutes left till the open, and he took a $100,000 shot.
Till the open?
Because again, they open till they're open till 15 minutes,
yeah,
till 15 minutes after the close, right? So he bought them at 3:55 PM.
So till the close, okay, five minutes till the close,
Yeah. 5 minutes to the close, okay. And he bought a option at 10 cents, basically. SPY was having a small pullback. His bet was basically that we closed at highs and that we would run in the after hours,
mm-hmm,
after Micron reported earnings,
which is what happened.
Which is exactly what happened. Now, I watched this guy lay off 10 grand, or sorry, 100 grand on 10 cent Q options for 444 strike. And Q's was probably at like 443 or something. By the time Micron reported earnings and by the time 15 minutes had closed, this guy made $1 million, bro.
Yep.
Guy made $1 million, bro.
Yep. There's a lot of interesting little secrets like that. You know what another really good one is? If you got somebody that's reporting earnings, or you think you're going to get any kind of catalyst on a Friday,
yep,
night, you can go, yep, in at 3:55. You don't even have to buy the index options. You can go in, say you think, you know, say a biotech's got fucking some shit. Well, that'll be priced in. But like, say you think there's going to be some catalyst on a Friday night. You can go in, you can buy the equity options on whatever the underlying are with zero time value in them, whatever. And then if the thing winds up fucking moving Friday after hours, you got like an hour before you can call your broker and tell them to exercise you after hours. They have until, I think, 5 to call the Options Clearing Council to tell you that you want to exercise,
yep,
which is some shit, yep, that I was talking to Open Outcry about many years ago. We were talking about shit like that, those kind of like, mm-hmm, little hacks. But you know, it never happens enough. You got to have you got to have an understanding of a catalyst that, that people don't
right.
get.
But these you're little talking corners. About – exactly. You're talking about little corners that guys who have been in this game long enough can sit there and exploit. And remember, it takes the normal investing theories completely out of whack because you're not sitting there trying to bet where anything is going. You're not sitting there doing anything.
Right.
You just found a corner here where you can exploit a certain type of edge, and you can take a shot that's really going to pay you if you hit, man. You're talking about a 10x type
right.
of thing or 20x type of situation, or even writing options at certain moments in time, you know, where you're collecting a shit ton of premium while everybody is buying that same premium.
Right.
There's a lot of games that can be played that are way beyond, you know, trying to figure out if a company should be, you know, worth more or less, or, you know, the original ways of thinking about investing. And those, you know, it's good to know that that edge is still there, bro.
And what your and boy, what your boy understood,
are bringing them out.
What your
yeah.
boy understood yesterday was either that Micron was reporting and he was taking a flyer on that, or that, you know, there's some type of market on close, fucking
yep.
automated shit, some type of
yep.
rebalancing, whatever. I mean,
and
look, we all
see,
you watch
yep.
the tape for more than a week, and you see between at 3:30, you see a kick one way or the other in the market. At 3:50, you see a kick one way or the other in the market because you're
yep.
you're getting all these automated market on close, and people closing out positions and rebalancing and such. And so, like, you know, I wonder if you go back a year and you just buy, you know, you buy a SPY long straddle at 3:55 and you close it at 4:05, what the return would be on just
yeah.
running that trade for 10 minutes every day.
Get some back testing up in there, man. Get some back testing up in there. You know, I've never back tested a strategy in my fucking
Who's
life.
Who's got time
man.
For that, man?
I'm still so old school in the sense of I've never actually done that
We're
shit.
Too busy living, man. We're too busy trying to figure it out as we go. That's the journey is the reward, you know?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I appreciate that I can have these conversations with you about these things, man. Because there's not a lot of folks that you can just chop it up with trading and chop it up with life too, man.
So listen, I want to give you a second to talk about the master course, which is coming up,
sure.
And then I'll let you go on your merry way this morning because everybody's got shit to do. But I will just say up front that you also do a live stream in the morning, starts at about 8:00 Eastern on the Sang Lucci YouTube channel. It's free to watch. I love watching it. You see me in that room once in a while. I always stop in to see what you guys are talking about just because it's a very relaxed vibe. A couple hundred people on there just watching you do your thing in the morning. But that's like, yep. for me, that's like listening to down-tempo music. There's no crazy bells and whistles going off.
Yeah,
you guys
none
are
of that.
Just setting the stage for the day to come. So tell me a little bit about what you're trying to do with that live stream, and then tell me about the master course, which is coming up in like 2 or 3 days is your cutoff
yep.
for registering for the master course. So let people know what that's all about. And
absolutely. Absolutely, man. That live stream is like a place for me to just really be me as a trader. Like it's my new every like couple of years, 3-4 years or whatever, I'll get tired of content in general. Actually, every year, shit, every month or whatever, I'll just get tired of content in and of itself, right? I mean, now you go on Instagram and you look at all this trading content, it's times 100 from when you and I started, bro. It's times 100 for all likes and for all different types of trading strategies and research and all this kind of stuff. I mean, it's times, you know, it's through the roof here. And most of the time, I can't stand it. So I hate kind of doing what everybody else is doing, even though what everybody else is doing usually works. It you know, it gets a lot of likes and blah, 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 blah. Live stream for me, it gives me the chance to really just speak about trading and finance and my opinions about everything without any filter whatsoever, without any thought whatsoever, without any predetermined, dressing kind of thing that you have to put on it to put it on YouTube or to put it on Instagram or all that kind of stuff. So you get me as I am, you know. I mean, the other day we were literally ranting about what happened at Planet Fitness with the supposed transgender guy who, you know, was in the women's locker room here just shaving.
He didn't
and
even look
little,
like a woman.
It wasn't even close.
He didn't even look like one. You know, there was a little girl in the corner and all this kind of stuff. And then Planet Fitness dumped the actual member who took the picture. Yeah. And, you know, and then we're looking at the stock and everything. And I'm reading these things. And I can't believe some of this stuff happens.
Hey, no,
but it does.
No fake tits, no nothing. You know what I mean? Like, at least make an effort. Like, he just looked like a dude that they just pulled out of a Burger King, just shaving in the women's room. I'm like, you know, put some makeup on. You know what I mean? Try to at least make an effort to be like, all right, I'm transitioning, whatever. Still shouldn't be in the women's room. That's another discussion for another day, in my personal opinion, with little girls around, et cetera. But, you know, they caught that picture of him. I'm like, shit, man, that just looks like some guy named Joe.
and in finance, in our world, in myself and Chris's world here, stuff like that happens every day. And we now live in a world where you can't even speak about some of this stuff. You can't even drop your opinions about some of this stuff without people taking it way beyond the context of finance and now bringing it into all these different worlds and debating on what can and cannot be said. In reality, we're talking about a publicly traded stock here that made an action here, and that's going to have severe consequences for that particular stock. So somebody has to talk about it, whether or not it's from a social perspective or a financial perspective. I'm able to just wing it on all of this kind of stuff, and that's why I love doing the live stream, and I love talking about just stocks in general, but how I would talk about them, and it's my perspective. So, you know, again, that's what the live stream is all about. We'd love to have you guys come out, and we do it every day for about an hour here off the open, and then we move over to our main room, which is called the steam room here, and this is where we sort of build out all these advanced data and tools here for options traders, and not only for options traders, equity traders and futures traders as well. Our master course that is coming out that is going to start live here in a couple of days. Chris will go ahead and put the links all in there, but it's basically the last time that we're going to run this as a live sort of session. After this, you know, if you want, you know, training here in options and tape reading and all that kind of stuff, you're going to have to come to me physically to be able to do this here. So this is one of the last times here that we're going to sell this and do this digitally here. You're getting four different instructors. You're getting Wall Street Jesus, who is teaching about flow trading and how to use the flow to support some of your trading decisions intraday as well as swing trading. You're getting our guy Ronchero, who has created a much more advanced option strategies for longer term swings like names like Costco, and how you want to continue rolling your options, how you want to sell options against your main core position. We have psychology talks here with our boy Charlie here, CEO of Sanglucci, Wall Street Jesus, as well as Chris Cady, who was also a floor trader for God knows how long and continues to trade to this day. We got trading psychology from them. So it's a complete kind of, you know, top to bottom sort of course here that focuses most of it on tape reading and how tape reading here can sort of change the way you sort of look at markets. And it's coming in a couple of days, man. So Chris will drop the link in there.
Yeah, Ronchero is he's a good vibe to listen to in the morning too, man. Sometimes he takes the helm when you're not around in the morning, I noticed.
Absolutely. And, you know, because I'm out there busy. Sometimes I'm out there on the beach, man, playing beach tennis and enjoying the
that's why it's difficult to get you on the fucking podcast that you're trying to schedule with me, you know. I know you don't listen to my podcast, but on the last episode, I had quite a large rant about the fact that you had my ass up at 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning to fucking do this podcast that we're doing today. And then I got a message, you know, basically what I said was this, you know, Lucci returns from Colombia under mysterious circumstances and finds himself wide awake at 3:30 in the morning for some reason one day and texts me, hey, man, can you do our 5 a.m. scheduled podcast an hour and a half earlier, to which I'm replying like, what the fuck are you doing? Are you up trading Bitcoin? Are you like, you know, do you have an explanation for my listeners as to what the fuck you were doing up at 3:30 in the morning? Now, supposedly, the way that it was supposed to come off was, hey, I'm just waking up. I'm an early riser.
However, me being, you know, a citizen of planet Earth for 41 years, I understand sometimes that that's not necessarily the case. You may be carrying yesterday's business into the next day. Can you explain that to my listeners? That's my question for you.
I was up that day because, again, like in Puerto Rico, we are on AST time, which is not Eastern time. And I had an I basically overbooked myself. And believe it or not, like, but you know, so AST here, we're basically an hour before. So right now we're back on, like, you guys change your clocks. So Puerto Rico never changes their clocks. You guys do. And then we end up having to adjust here because I'm a trader here and I'm all, but my life focuses around 9:30
in the morning. You don't have daylight savings time?
No, so we don't have it. So when you guys change, now I'm on regular time. So I basically overbooked myself, and I had another meeting at that freaking time. I was also up because, yeah, I couldn't – I had just come back from freaking Colombia, and that trip was absolutely insane as well. And I was trading Bitcoin as well. I was, like, adjusting my freaking BTC options, and, you know, because we had an explosive move overnight.
Yeah, that was the week that it was just going – ham. I think it was up like 10% that night. So I was just envisioning you with your fucking eyes like bloodshot, just sitting there looking at the charts.
Yeah. Like, I was at the office alone here with the AC pumping here, you know, just pounding water and trying to get my shit together, and then realizing like, oh shit, I have this other thing I got to do when Chris is going to actually wake up. So I got my times mixed up, and that's what happened, bro.
Got it. Let me just ask you one more question, too, and then I'm going to let you go. I know I got to let you slide. But anyway, so I'll put all the shit for the master course in the podcast description if you want to check it out. Hey, it's worth it. Lucci's been a longtime supporter of the podcast. They listen to me talk about your shit every single episode. I love you to death. You know that. I wouldn't be on here touting your stuff no matter how much you pay for a sponsorship if I didn't like you. End of story, full stop. One last thing that I love about you. I'm on your thing the other day, you know, and I'm looking at your wrap up from like last month, and then also I see on your Twitter last month at some point, like, you know, you just write, hey man, I took $600,000 loss in one day last month, and you set the bar in terms of transparency for people that take losses. You know, you can find a million idiots on Twitter that want to tell you about their good days, but every once in a while I'll be scrolling through my shit and I'll be like, Lucci took a $600,000 loss today.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thinking, all I can think, man, is if that was me, and I've taken some huge losses, man, we all have.
Yeah.
If that's me, the last thing I want to do is fucking mouth off about it on Twitter.
Yeah.
And you kind of like force yourself to do that. So, man, what's that mindset like for you, man? How do you overclock your brain and trick yourself into saying, I have to talk about it?
You know what it is. You know exactly what it is. And it's what it is. It's throwing the weight off. It's throwing the weight off, and it's the fastest way to move forward.
It's giving it up to God is what you're doing.
You give it up to God. You give it up to the world. You give it up to whatever it needs to be, and then it becomes your past. And the quicker it becomes your past, and the quicker you can – obviously, you're not going to freaking forget about the shit right then and there. But it helps in the process. It helps in the process of pushing it behind you and being able to move forward. And the quicker you're able to do that as a trader, you guys all know when you're listening, and if you guys are traders as well, the quicker you can do that and the quicker you can push it off, the quicker you can snap it back, and the quicker you can, you know, you can get back to basics here. Because if you can't and you live in the past and you live with, you know, and you beat yourself up for some of the things that you've done, and you kick yourself when you're already freaking down, that road leads to years of the same type of activity, and that road only leads to one place, and that place is lack of confidence and being unable to gather your things and keep moving forward. And that's what this game is all about. Business, life, and the whole nine, man. That's all this stuff is about. All we're trying to do is give this stuff up to God and continue to move forward and live the best lives that we're able to live.
That's heavy shit.
That's it. That's all it is. It all is the same thing.
That is way better of an answer than I thought I was going to get. And I actually, to be honest with you, I mean, a lot of times I'm on podcasts and I kind of chew the fat. That actually just makes me think that, you know what I mean? Like that, that's heavy shit. know, because you don't have to be a religious person, but like some people that are religious, I'm like religious light, you know, sure. But like I have instances where I feel a burden for one reason or another, whether it's anxiety, whether it's, sure. you know, I'm questioning things that you know, anything, you know what I mean? Just something that I feel like I got a bug on my back and I can't get it off, right? Where I'll go and I will kneel down and I will try to give that burden up to my higher power, right? And that always gives me a little bit of relief because it makes me feel like, okay, you know, like I've done what I can do, right? And I can learn from whatever it is I need to learn from. And now it gives me the strength to forge forward. And it sounds like that's exactly the analog that you're talking about, man.
100%, man. And it could be as small as you getting your ass kicked in jiu-jitsu one day.
Right.
And you feeling like, you know, you're not getting better, or, you know, you've been trying to do this one thing for the longest time and you still can't get it. Or some days you have it and some days you don't. This is all life is, man. Some days you got it, some days you don't, but you got to keep, you know, this is the gift. This is the gift that we have. And whatever you can think of in your head here, you can do. It is freaking possible, man. So you gotta wake up and go after it.
Our mutual buddy Nick Lentz, the former UFC fighter, I was talking to him one day, and I said, Nick, you know, Nick the Carney Lentz, great guy. You should follow on Twitter, too. Yeah. He's a great trader, follow. Very smart guy. But I said to him one day, Nick, like, what do you do when you have a bad day of training? You know, because some days I go in the gym and I just get my ass kicked. You know what I mean? Like, and I've been training for years now, and I'll go in there. You know, some days I feel like a stud. Some days I'm getting tapped out by the trial class guy, you know, 6 times in fucking 10 seconds. And I'm wondering, like, damn, do I know anything? So I said, Nick, what do you do when you have those kind of days? He just said, you just got to figure out a way to get back up and get back in there the next day. He's like, a training day is a training day. And he's like, that's it. He's like, you don't stop and take inventory. You just go back and keep training, man.
Yep.
And
yep.
so, like, you feel it feels like you have engineered a little system for yourself to help you kind of get back on that track in an expedited fashion.
That's all it is, man. That's all it is. The sooner you realize how much knowledge you have, the sooner you realize how good you are because you've been doing this for this freaking long, the sooner you realize, whatever, man, this is just another hump in the road. And as long as I got a chip in a chair and a shot, my time is coming, and it always does, man. So
all right.
That's it.
Last order of business. Let's blow up Charlie's inbox. He told me not to give out his email, but we're going to do it anyways. He's like, send him contact at sanglucci.com. You know, I was like, listen, if you're interested in the master course, get in touch with Charlie directly.
Talk to Charlie directly. It's IE, by the way, on the Charlie. So,
Charlie at sanglucci.com. Blow his shit up. If you're interested in the master course, we're going to fuck his weekend up. Sorry about that, man. Lucci, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate you. Anything
of
else
course.
Before you split?
Philly, man. Philly. We're doing Philly together,
yes,
bro.
We are.
We're doing Philly together, man. I'm coming to Philly for the first time in my life. I've never been to Philly, and I wouldn't be there without my boy Chris, man.
How did I forget that?
We're coming to Philly. I'm going to be there with Chris. We're going to do just a little live in-person kind of hangout situation, and then we're all just going to hang out after. Hopefully, I don't know if Chris is going to be drinking at that time, but whether he is or not, Chris is still the man.
Yeah, I forgot, man. We're doing a Lucci Meets in Philadelphia, which is going to be me and you. We're going to do like a little live, just basically what we did right now, and then we're going to take questions, and that's it. We're going to fucking hang out and have a couple cocktails for a few hours. And we got a date, but I don't remember of it. I think it's July 20th or June
20th.
July 20th.
We're looking at around June or July here. So stay tuned, guys. We'll promo it once we get the location and everything.
And then I never want to hear anybody ever again ask me to do some shit in person or to meet you for a drink or whatever, because I get those messages all the time for years. And I'm like, shit, I got to figure out a way to do this. So that's my one obligation. So you come to this thing. And then that's it. And then I want to be left alone for another 20 years. All right, Lucci.
20 years.
Have a great day, brother. Thank you so much for everything, man.
All right. Talk soon, Chris.
All right. That was the one, the only Sang Lucci from Sang Lucci Trading and from The Steam Room. Those links always in my podcast description. You can email Charlie at sanglucci.com if you're interested in the master course. Good dude, man. Happy to call him a friend. Wild that we have 40 years of experience now between the two of us. You wouldn't know it from listening to me, would you?
July 20th, we're doing our little in-person thing. So if you've been waiting to confront me in person about some shit I talked about you on Twitter in the year 2012, this will be your chance to do it. Just all I ask is that you go easy on me, please. I'm a very meek, meager man. But for now, fools, I'm out of here. Thank you so much for listening. I will be back in a week or two. I'm going to have James Lavish on soon. I think it might be my next guest. Of course, because I'm saying that now, you know it won't be. But for now, I'm out.
Peace.
Oh, where's the fucking button?